Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 7-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. So today we're talking to a good friend of mine, Ed Duer. I have never done an interview with someone who was doing a team in training or training for a marathon or something. So I saw this pop up on my Facebook page, and Ed is a good friend of mine. So I thought, you know what, this would be the perfect time because I've done some things for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, when I was down in Ann Arbor. They did a show for PBS, and I was helping them out with that. So I thought this would be awesome to find out more about you and as well as about your fundraising. So why don't we get started by telling me a little bit about your cancer and how that started, and let's go from there.
Well, back in January of 2009, I began realizing that there were a whole lot of things physically with me that just weren't quite right. And probably the worst offender of them all was I lived on the third floor, a third floor apartment, mm-hmm. and I could walk up the two flights of stairs, and I had to sit down for 15 or 20 minutes to recover my energy so that I could even get up and, you know, go make a cup of tea or something. Wow. And this is for someone who has pretty much been a runner all of his life, and I didn't have the energy to climb two flights of stairs. So I went to see my doctor. He did the whole physical thing. And the blood work came back, and he said, we found a problem with your blood, and we want you to go see a hematologist. Well, it took me a little while to figure out that a hematologist is just a very kind mm-hmm. word for an oncologist.
Right.
So when I got a letter from the Cancer Center of North Carolina, I'm going, what?
Who? Why?
Nobody said anything about cancer.
Yeah, I don't like it when people surprise you like that. It's just like, oh, yeah, by the way, it's, yeah.
Yeah, and I was literally, I remember the day like it was yesterday. I mm-hmm. stood in my kitchen staring at this letter, and my hands were shaking so much I couldn't even read it. I had to set the letter down so that I could read the thing, and it was all about my appointment in a week. So I went in there, and lo and behold, the blood work indicated that I had a very, very rare form of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's commonly known as Waldenstrom's lymphoma. The medical term for it takes weeks to learn how to pronounce it, and I finally mastered it after about 6 months. It's actually Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia.
Whoa.
Good luck.
You're like, why do I have to have that? Thanks.
Yeah, I don't, yeah. And what it does is that there's proteins in the blood. Mm-hmm. And one of them is the immunoglobulin M, which is the one that is affected by Waldenstrom's. And the bone marrow actually produces an incredible amount of this stuff. And then because it's an anomalous form of it, it forms itself into a very large molecular ring. And the molecule becomes so big, and there's so much of it in there, it actually acts as sludge in the blood.
Ooh.
So you can actually lose the ability to bleed from the very small capillaries because the blood can't flow through there.
Yeah.
And one of the side effects of Waldenstrom's is what they call neuropathy,
mm-hmm.
which creates numbness in the fingers and toes. Fortunately, I never got it in the fingers, but I did get it in the toes and the feet a mm-hmm. fair amount. And I still have some residual from that.
Really? After all this time?
After all this time, yeah.
Wow.
But my first oncologist basically said, you know, the problem with Waldenstrom's is most people don't die from the disease itself. They usually die from complications from it, like heart attack or stroke. And
you're like, where's the good news, doctor?
Yeah, trust me, I haven't gotten to the point where I'm wondering about where the hell the good news is. But he goes on to say, and he says, from the looks of your blood numbers, you've got a 50 to 80% chance of that happening on any given day.
Whoa. That's scary.
And I sat there and looked at him, and I said, so what you're telling me is I've got 7 days to live. And he said, no, that's not what I'm saying. You, most patients will live without even treatment for 5 more years. I said, wait a minute. I'm an engineer. I understand numbers. I understand statistics.
Right.
50 to 80% chance of dying any given day means you got 7 days to live. And he says, no, that's not what I meant. And I said, well, tell me what you meant, because what you're telling me is not any fun, and it's not a pretty picture. Anyway, one thing led to another, and he did some confirmatory bone marrow tests, which I hope I never have to go through those again. And he confirmed everything, and I said, okay, I'm going to get a second opinion. And he said, well, I have some folks here locally that will be more than happy to do that. And I said, no, that's my job, and I know where I'm going. And he said, where? And I said, I'm going to the Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh.
What?
That was the weird. I'm serious. That was the last word he said to me.
Why would he respond like that? I don't.
Because he knew that the minute I left his office, he would never see me again.
Well, that shouldn't matter. Be it you being cured should be the, or cancer-free, I should say, should be the more important than you being his patient forever.
Yes, but yeah, he just kind of closed up the file and said, you can check with the nurse outside.
Wow.
And he walked out. At any rate, I went to the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, and they're absolutely wonderful, and I could talk for hours about these people. They're absolutely phenomenal. They, instead of telling me to come out there, they said that on your first visit, we expect you to bring a caretaker with you so that you have someone who is kind of on the outside of your disease that can listen and can ask questions, because you're probably not going to be in any mental state to do that.
Exactly. Yes.
So they sent me and my daughter a plane ticket to fly out there from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Wow.
And she was sitting there in the office when we finally met with Dr. River, my oncologist out there. And he says, well, I have good news and bad news for you. And the first thought going through my head is, oh, boy, here we go again. And he says, the good news is your former oncologist did an outstanding job with the diagnosis and the diagnostic work and the lab work and all. And I'm looking at him and I said, okay, what's the bad news?
Yeah, is that the good news or bad news?
The bad news is he was absolutely correct. You have this disease. This is what it is. And there is absolutely no known cure for it. Mm-hmm. We can treat you for the next 40 years. I looked at him and said, that's unacceptable to me. And he said, we can treat you and keep you in remission till you die of old age. And I said, that is unacceptable. And my daughter's sitting next to me. She knows me. So she's sitting next to me, and she's starting to chuckle. And he says, Dr. River is getting frustrated at this point. He says, you have to understand the reality of, and I said, I stopped him right there. And I said, I understand the reality of my situation. I don't accept it. And he looks over at his nurse sitting next to me. She's kind of smirking. And he says, this is going to be an interesting ride, isn't it? And she said, I told you.
That's awesome.
Now, to put my treatment into perspective,
yes,
the average patient worldwide with Waldenstrom's lymphoma will have blood numbers for this particular IgM protein in the range of 3,000 to 3,500.
Okay.
The normal range is between 67 and 171.
Oh.
So 3,000 is pretty freaking high.
That is pretty
really, really high. My numbers were almost double that. Actually, they were more than double that. They were almost at 8,000.
Did they ever see anybody with numbers that high? Or did they?
My oncologist, no.
No.
Ooh. And he is one of the leading experts in the United States on Waldenstrom's.
Right.
He has treated more patients than any other oncologist in the country.
Wow.
And he point blankly told me, he says, I'm going to do my best with you, but I've never seen anybody with numbers quite like this. And then he paused and he says, but then again, I've never quite met anyone quite like you.
There you go. Perfect.
And I said, okay, is that a good thing? He says, yeah, actually it is, because we might make it. And so we got started in late March, early April with the first round of chemo. And one of the drugs is a drug that most folks that were around in the 1960s will recognize it instantly, and that is thalidomide. Thalidomide almost killed me.
What is thalidomide? It sounds familiar.
Thalidomide is the drug that back in the 1960s, it was used to give to pregnant women to provide them with relief from nausea.
Oh.
And as it turns out, it was responsible for some of the worst birth defects that modern medicine has ever seen.
It would be good for treating cancer? That sounds weird.
Well, they discovered that it had some properties that makes it very, very, a very good candidate for chemo. And it does for a lot of people. I ended up suffering from a case of hypercalcemia.
Which is what?
It's an elevated level of calcium in the blood. And the normal upper range is, I think it's 10.8. And it is such a delicate balance that if you go over 11, which is just 2/10 of a point, you go over 11, you're considered hypercalcemic. And if you hit 12, you should be under the care of a doctor.
Wow.
And at 13, almost every doctor will at least request, if not require, that you be hospitalized. And at 14, the average patient will go into an unrecoverable coma. And they don't know of anyone on record that has ever survived beyond a blood calcium level of 15. Mine was 16.8.
Oh, whoa. So now they do.
And yeah, I'm saying now they do. They have no idea how I survived. They had no idea how I was walking around and talking most of the time fairly lucidly. I don't either, but that also played into the chemo brain because I lost 5 days worth of memory thanks to the calcium.
You probably didn't want to remember how you were feeling, though.
Probably not. But if you took all the memories for that 5 days and put it into a movie, it'd last probably less than 90 seconds.
Right.
And I still have minute memory issues that I know is directly linked to the hypercalcemia. But at any rate, after that, he says, no, we're not doing that stuff anymore. We're going with a couple of other drugs. And one, if not both of them, were developed as a result of research funds from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
Okay.
And I'll get into a little more about that in a few minutes.
Okay.
So at any rate, it started that treatment in early May. And normally patients will take a dose of the chemo every 3 weeks for 12 to 24 months, depending upon the severity. I took 2.5 doses. And Dr. Rivers says, you're responding incredibly well to this stuff. Let's take a break. I want you to keep getting blood tests weekly to keep an eye on this stuff, and let's bring you back in September. Now, this was in June.
Right, okay.
So he's saying, come back in 3 months.
That's a little scary.
Just a bit, especially since I don't have any idea as to what's going on.
Yes, that's scary. Anytime the doctor says, well, why don't we wait and see, you're just like,
Yeah, it's always one of those things of, okay, don't you know what's going on? But in many cases, yeah, they do. But with Waldenstrom's, with this being so rare, there's so many different variables in it that it's hard to really predict how it's going to go. But anyway, within a month of that, I could feel my energy level coming back. And it came back. When it came back with a vengeance. I was literally climbing the walls 30 minutes after I got out of bed in the morning. I had to do something. So my daughter, the one that went out to Tulsa with me, said, called me one day and he said, I need the names and addresses of all your friends and family. And I said, why? And said, because I'm doing a fundraising half marathon with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in your honor in December of this year.
Well, at least it wasn't getting a wake together. You're like, what?
Yeah, no kidding. And, yeah, I wouldn't have cared for giving her that information at that point. Anyway. So I'm sitting there on the phone with her, and I said, okay, so when were you going to tell me about this? And she said, I just did. I said, that doesn't cut it. 3 days later, I signed up to do the exact same race with her.
What?
Yes. 6 weeks after I got finished with chemo.
What did your doctor say?
He didn't find out about it till September.
You're like, you did what now?
There was no way I was going to tell him the moment I signed up. Because
yeah, that's true.
There was no way I was going to stop at that point.
Right.
So anyway, I signed up to do a half marathon down near the beach, which is absolutely gorgeous. And when I headed back out to the Cancer Treatment Center in September, I went out there and we did the blood work and sitting there in his office and he's on the computer screen looking at all the blood results and he keeps scrolling and scrolling and jumping back and forth from page to page and he goes, I don't believe this. And I said, what? And he says, you're in clinical remission.
Oh, wow. That was.
And I said, whoa, say that again.
Wow.
And he said, you're in clinical remission. And I said, what does clinical remission mean? And he says, it means technically, medically, we have this disease under control.
Awesome.
And I said, okay, so what's the treatment plan from this point forward? He says, wait and see.
Right.
Because your numbers are still going down. We haven't hit bottom here yet. So.
Right. And when you hear that, you know that they're still watching you, but they don't want to give you anything else because that might shock your body into getting weaker. So right now, since everything is explaining this for the people listening, you know, clinical remission is good because it seems like you're stabilizing and heading in the right direction.
Yeah. And one of the things that I thoroughly admire about the Cancer Treatment Centers of America is their philosophy towards treatment. And the way Dr. River explained it, he said, you know, most oncologists, if you think of cancer as a fly on the wall, most oncologists want to take a cannon and kill the fly.
Right.
And he says, you can imagine what that does to the wall. And he says, we take a little gentler approach to it. The first thing we try to do is take a fly swatter and kill the fly. If that doesn't work, we can work our way up to a newspaper and a baseball bat and, you know, we can work up to the cannon.
Right.
But he said, before we even pick up the fly swatter, the first thing we're going to do is make sure that wall is strong enough to take the hit. Which I have never heard that from a doctor in my life.
Yeah, me neither. That's a good philosophy.
I want to make sure you are strong enough to take the treatment that we're going to give you. So, yeah, my team out there included a naturopath, a nutritionist, a psychoneuroimmunologist, and, of course, my oncologist and his staff. And I had a chiropractor if I wanted it. I also had the ability to utilize an acupuncturist if I chose to do that.
Nice.
And one of the phenomenal things about that place is the cafeteria, the hospital cafeteria. People would rather eat there than go out into downtown to eat.
Oh, yes. I visited the Cancer Treatment Centers of America for an empowerment rally, and the one in Chicago, outside of Chicago.
Yes,
and it was just
up in Zion.
Yes. And it was, yes, you were right about the cafeteria. You didn't want to leave. You wanted to go back for seconds.
Oh, it's,
sure.
It is wonderful. And I found out that all of the folks that cook the food, they're not cooks. These are professionally trained, certified chefs.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I was out there for lunch, I had shrimp in a bourbon cream sauce.
You're like, can I have another appointment, Doc, please?
Yeah, exactly. This was lunch in a hospital cafeteria. And I think I paid $5 for it.
That's awesome. So you have the your...
The food is phenomenal. And most of it is organic.
Right.
Which is, you know, is just that much better.
So you had your you went into clinical remission and you finished your half marathon.
Before I finished the half marathon, I ended up with gallbladder disease and I had to take my gallbladder out. So I lost 2 weeks worth of training for that, and then I ended up getting a virus that knocked me out for another 2 more weeks. And I'm going, I don't think I have time to finish this thing because we're already towards the end of October. And November or December was the race. And my coach says, you're grossly underestimating your strength. You can do this. And I said, okay. And went out and did the half marathon. Did it in just over 2.5 hours. Very, very pleased with that. And it was wonderful. Went back March of the following year, which would have been March of 2010,
mm-hmm.
for a checkup with them, and got out there, and Dr. River plays the game of searching all the computer screens for the
right
on the blood results. He's going back and forth, and he finally sits back and he says, I can't find it. And I said, I thought you said you had all the results. He says, I do. I can't find any cancer in your body.
That's good. That's awesome.
And I said, what did you just say? He said, there is no evidence of disease.
Oh, we like Ned. Ned is a good guy.
Yeah, oh, yes. Ned is. I love Ned. And I looked at him and I said, I told you, you son of a bitch. Don't tell me I can't do something. Because if necessary, I will die proving you wrong.
That was not the outcome he was hoping for, though.
No, he was hoping that my numbers would still be going down.
Right.
And as it turns out, they did continue to go down for a little while, and they've stabilized down in the normal zone. And they have been there now for 5+ years.
So now this marks your five-year cancer-free, and now you want to do another race. And this is what we're talking about, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society team in training. You'll be doing that one in November.
And I am doing that race the first of November. It'll be the first Sunday in November of this year. I am doing a 10K race here in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I have sent you the links to all of that, including my fundraising page. Because all these races done with team and training are done as fundraisers for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
So tell me a little bit about the team and training. They actually help, they find people like you and train them to run. Like what kind of things do they do? They give you like a schedule? Because I'm not a runner unless, like we were talking before, someone's chasing me and then you should call 911 if you see me running down the street.
Yes. What they do is the team and training got started back in 1988,
mm-hmm.
and it got started with just a very, very small group of people who were running and they actually did it to raise money for, I believe it was the founder's father who was diagnosed with lymphoma. And that part of the story, I'm not really sure about.
That's
However,
okay.
1988 is when team and training got started. And it got started as a fundraising proposition. I believe it was at either the Boston or New York Marathon. Since then, they have trained over 600,000 participants.
Wow.
And the money that they have raised has allowed LLS, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, to donate over $1 billion to cancer research. So they're doing a very, very effective job with this.
Mm-hmm.
To get back to team and training and how they do this, they take some of their participants come back every single season to do more races, and they get very good at doing the training. And those folks get additional training to become coaches.
Okay.
Those coaches, in turn, train the newcomers into the organization as to how to complete a half marathon or a marathon. They will also do what they call a century ride. This is for cycling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 100-mile race on a bicycle.
That's okay.
And I'm thinking,
yeah, that's a lot.
Why would you want to? If you need to go 100 miles, why would you take a bicycle?
Exactly.
and I love cycling. I actually love it more than I do racing or running.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they train these folks to do that. They also do triathlons, and they have coaches to get you from literally being a couch potato to crossing that finish line in about 4 or 5 months.
Oh, that's awesome!
And it's a fairly intense training program, and it has been tried and true. It works. They have nutritionists. They have injury specialists that will teach you how not to get injured, which is far more important than what to do when you do get injured.
Of course, yes.
And probably the best thing about the coaches is when you get out there to do your race, you've got your coaches with you.
Oh,
and
sweet.
They will come out on the track or on the course, and they will run with you for a short period of time, and then they'll go and find other participants, and they'll run with them and check in with you and make sure that you're doing okay and all. And when I did my half marathon, about the 6 mile point, about halfway through it, I twisted an ankle. And I did end up finishing it, but it took a few miles, and the ankle and the calf started to really hurt. I did some damage to a couple of ligaments in there when I twisted it. Well, our lead coach came out and met me at the 11-mile mark, and he walked me all the way into the 13-mile point, at which point he said, this is 1/10 of a mile to the finish line. This is yours.
Nice.
I have nothing to do with this one.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I would imagine that would be the hardest part, would be someone like me who doesn't run, getting the motivation and actually doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Or knowing what to do. Exactly. I mean, that's...
Yes. Yes. Now, knowing how to build up your training is critical to being able to pull off something like this.
Exactly.
And the coaches do a phenomenal job. And my daughter, the one that went out to the Cancer Treatment Center with me, she's one of my coaches this season.
Oh,
so
sweet.
I've got the best of both worlds here.
You sure do. That's excellent. Yep. And how is the training coming?
The training's coming very well. I've decided that running this one may be up in the air still.
Oh.
I'm definitely walking it at the very least.
That's
but
all
I will
right.
probably end up running half of it and walking the other half. So,
but you're finishing it, and that's the most important thing.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you're raising money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
I'm finishing it, and I'm raising money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And the funds that they raise from all of their campaigns, which Team and Training is just one of them, goes towards finding a cure for leukemia, lymphoma, Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's disease, myeloma, and it also goes to improve the lives of patients and their families.
Awesome. And, you know,
so there's a lot of things they do with that money.
And just like that, our half hour is over. So, LLS.
Wonderful.
I know. That's crazy, right? I know we could talk to you for that
long.
Wow.
That is crazy.
LLS.org is the website for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And then we will post your specific training page to our Empower Radio link for this as well. So that people want to donate to you, they will.
Wonderful.
Yes. Well, so nice talking to you, Ed. If you hang on, I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mel Majoros. I am the Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's the Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.